Blog Talk Radio.
This is Jasa Sagonige, a seventh great grandson of Sawanuka, keeper of the Holy Cherokee Ark, who during the American Revolution became first beloved man of the Cherokee, head man of the Upper, Middle, and Lower Cherokee. Please join us at 5 p.m. Pacific Time on Sunday evening and learn how you, regardless of ancestry, may gain the privilege of worshiping as you please, even using indigenous, plant-based, native sacraments. Aho. You are listening to a pre-recorded interview from the archives of Prophecy Keepers Radio. You have been led by the Spirit to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a cooperative service of the White Roots of Peace Council. Whether it be the modern Asaga of Peru, the current Kahunas of Hawaii, today's medicine people of the Americas, the Holy Ones of Africa, shamans of the East, North, West, and South, or the present-day Anahuacis of the Cherokee, we bring you the traditional elders and teachers of our modern times and their confidants from the Americas, the steppes of Asia, the Holy Land, the islands of the sea, Africa, and Australasia. We have not been conquered, and we defy the established order. This is Will Bluewater, the host of Prophecy Keepers Radio, speaking on behalf of the White Roots of Peace Council.
It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow?
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. Folks, the scriptures say my people perish for lack of knowledge. We live in a world that's becoming more and more dangerous as time goes by. Millions of people are aware of this fact now and are actively preparing. Back in 2004, the folks here at Prophecy Keepers Foundation foresaw this situation and began preparing information for you. Friends, I seriously suggest that you head over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look at the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library. The Prophecy Keepers Trilogy is a 1,000-page intelligence briefing. The trilogy is a sum total of many years of collecting, collating, analyzing, and comparing prophecies from all over the planet. Before he passed away in 1985, Mad Bear Anderson predicted that someone would do exactly what we have done. Mad Bear passed into spirit in 1985 before he could realize his dream of collecting and comparing prophecies from all over the world. He said in his biography, "Someday someone will collect all the native people's prophecies, myths, and legends and would publish them in one place so they could be compared with those of all native peoples worldwide, and then we really will have something." And friends, you'll be absolutely shocked to find out that we discovered exactly what that something was that Mad Bear wanted everyone to know. As it turns out, that certain special something that Mad Bear was searching for in the prophecies has everything to do with your physical safety and how to protect it. Now folks, there's absolutely nothing available on the planet like this collection. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files in 222 folders. You'll also receive direct access to links that will allow you to download all 145 past Prophecy Keepers interviews. Now folks, I won't kid you, Prophecy Keepers does need money to continue to operate. We had a very close call at the end of last month. We almost didn't raise the funds that we needed to stay here on Blog Talk Radio. So please head on over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look. OCO, Ginalee, this is Blue Otter coming to you from the Cumberland Plateau, the ancient home of the Aniuntikwalaski, the people of the lightning and thunder, or the military protectors of the Cherokee Nation.
Hi, folks. It's Otter here, and with my
trusty sidekick, Mark the Badger, Borcherding. And we were going to have Mark on for the entire 2 hours tonight, but spoke with Benny LeBeau earlier. Benny is a guy that's been running these huge medicine wheel ceremonies. I spoke with him a couple times back in 2004 and 5, back when the Yellowstone volcano was rumbling, and they were successful in quieting that the day after the ceremonies were over. Benny does a lot of traveling, and he's got a special message. Looked like it runs about, I was thinking it was going to be longer, about 23 minutes, something like that. So what we're going to do is say hi to everybody. Mark, how you doing?
Okay, how you doing?
I'm doing just fine. I just got off a two-hour show with Rail and Allen from Rumor Mill News.
Part of it.
And I'm sure folks can. I'll tell folks where to find that. And anyway, yeah, let's listen to this message from Benny and come back in about 24 minutes, and then we'll get on with it. And if anybody's online, folks have been hearing a lot from you, but I want you to tell your story, you know, before you get involved with taking calls or anything like that. But anyway, let's listen to Benny. And now you're having a power outage where you are. Mark, what let's do is I'll disconnect you and call you back in about 20 minutes, okay?
Okay.
Okay, good deal. Here's Benny. Well, hi, everybody. We've got Benny LeBeau on the line. He's got about a 15-minute update on his activities. What you been up to, Benny? Where are you and where are you going?
All right. Now I'm in Washington State. Around Olympia in Washington, and we've been doing medicine bowl ceremonies, and we did one here last year up here to heal the environment. And since then, in 2010, went into 2011, we've been doing medicine bowl ceremonies to promote healing for the environment. And right now, we're preparing to do a 4,000-mile medicine bowl ceremony that will involve North, Central, and South America, which is being orchestrated in a way by the work that was done for between 9 and 7 months in Mexico and Guatemala and Costa Rica and down in parts of South America with the spiritual peoples of the Mayans and Aztecs, the Incas, and many other groups of the people that are the Red Nations that are indigenous to America, and all the other indigenous tribes of the Earth, which represents the Black, the White, and the Yellow Nations also, that there were many groups that were contacted, and around the world, world messages were sent out for people to consider to come together on June 18th, 19th, 20th, and 21st on the solstice of the 2012 to heal the energies in the environment. And this is a process that has been an ongoing work that has been done by myself and others who joined in the dreams and visions since we did the ceremony to heal the Super Yellowstone Volcano on May 8th of 2004.
I remember that one. That one,
sacred site.
That one worked. It hushed the volcano. I remember that because I talked to you right about that time.
Yes, and so that healed the volcano because of the vibration on the opposite side of the Earth is Iran and Iraq. Mother Earth is really sensitive to sounds and vibrations and actions and even words and thoughts of people that are being recorded in the electrical magnetic energy force fields of the environment. Which is there's a matrix on the surface, and as Native American peoples and other groups alike understand this, it's known as Grandmother Spider's Web of Life. And like Chief Self in Washington, part of the tribes in Washington there, he was known as Chief Seattle eventually, and what he had mentioned in many of his recordings that was been interpreted the best that they could get it was that he said that what man does to the web of life, man does to himself. So because of this, what's happening, we're clearing the web of life with these ceremonies clearing the elements of the earth, wind, fire, and water to bless the environment. And in the environment, there were many things that has transpired and has been recorded in the web of life, in the flower of life. It's called as a symbol of a geometric pattern that holds the DNA of all creation, which are the cells of the earth and the cells of the body, which is the molecular structure of the mitochondrial DNA. So this is all scientific information and wisdom. And as a Native American as the Eastern Shoshone from the Wind River Indian Reservation, I was asked by my elders to go to college. And I did for almost 5 years. And then I had many dreams and visions from the ancestors, and they asked me to now leave. I had learned enough in college of the false ways of being taught there, of not working with the way of healing the earth and what was taking place with the greed and materialism through the mining and development and taking of the resources in a not a very beautiful way, which was harming the environment, which was causing earthquakes, tornadoes, fires, floods, and volcanoes, because of bad sound and vibration and pillaging and thundering of the earth, so to say. So because of these things, this is why we did that ceremony to heal the Super Yellowstone volcano in Wyoming, and we worked on 20 sacred sites. One was in the center, 19 in a circle, and because of this work, that ceremony was 1,200 miles across, and it did heal the energy. And the scientists said it was only a coincidence that this did take place and it did heal, but this was predicted by the dreams and visions I sent out to humanity, and many joined us at that time to heal the environment. And so this is what we're doing again to heal the North, Central, and South America energies that are out of balance. So with this kind of work, we're here to represent the healing, to soften the blow in nature of the earthquakes, volcanoes, fires, floods, tornadoes, tsunamis, and those kinds of things, and to send a message to the world of how peace works, is having peace in our actions and thoughts and taking care of Mother Earth as stewards of Mother Earth, giving thankfulness to her and holding love for her and taking things in a ceremonial way of respect and blessing everything that we take. Every hole we cut in the earth, we heal the hole. We talk to Mother Earth before we take it and tell her how we're going to utilize it for the betterment of all people, all of creation, and we do the prayer, and then we feel the energy. It doesn't leak out of the earth when we cut a hole. It's like cutting a hole in your arm. Life force energy leaks out in the earth. It's the same thing. You cut a hole in the earth, the life force energy of Mother Earth leaks out, which is electrical current. And that electrical current is what we survive from, is electricity. And that's electrical magnetic energy. So there's a lot of ways to talk about it. I don't want to go into it so deep, but I'd like to bring an awareness that because of these things, this is how we've been healing places that have droughts, by healing the holes and the cuts of mining and development, roads and highways, railroads, and also warring and fighting in the historical record that has been recorded in the elements of Mother Earth and Mother Nature worldwide. So whether it's in warring and fighting with the tribes who were warring and fighting before the Spaniards came, before the white nations came, where they warred and fought, the souls were trapped in the electromagnetic energy force fields of the environment, and they were trapped there, and that holds a low vibrational energy, and nature falls out of balance there because of what took place. So in the ceremonies, we do spirit releasement ceremonies by releasing the spirits of the people. A lot of people have seen the wars replaying, like the fighting in the Civil War. You can still see the people replaying the warring and fighting. A lot of the people's souls are still trapped in the houses. And so when we do these ceremonies, we release the spirit of the people who have passed away. And we do that for the animals. We do it for the birds. We do it for the trees. We do it for all things. And when we clear that, then the rainbow colors turn bright again, and there's a heavy energy that's there, releases and goes away. And when we heal the energy of the environment, then we have a pristine environment that is a whole lot better than what it once was. But all we can do is to heal the energy of Mother Earth, and we can't change her from shifting. She's going to shift anyway, and because, you know, we went too far now in what's happened in the history of mining and development and warring and fighting with the greed and materialism. But a time would come when we would recognize this information and wisdom and clarity by wisdom keepers that had the prophecies and the messages and the dreams and the visions and the heart to hear these messages, to deliver them to humanity. There would be many people would come forth, and they'd be known as the Warriors of the Rainbow, and they would be people of great heart, great mind, great spirit, to break out of the old and bring in the new, which would be the old, but letting the old way of what humanity was following go and move into a way that was talking about how the energy of the environment works in peaceful ways, brings peace in the area as we clear the negative things that happened in those places. And this is what we're proposing to take place in this 4,000-mile medicine hole ceremony that's going to be, you know, 4,000 miles across, and that's in North Central and South America. We're hoping to send this message to the world so that with the information and teachings is on my website, or our website, with it's called earthwisdomfoundation.net, and it's the Eagle Condor United medicine hole ceremony, that the Eagle Nations and the Condor Nations unite all nations and cultures to set in ceremonies to take a look at what's taking place in their areas in the historical record of history, the drama and trauma of warring and fighting. There's addictions, there's suicides, there's been war, a lot of souls were trapped there, on the roads animals have been killed, a lot of people died, just to clear the roads of all that kind of energies and look into the history of what took place in their areas and clear and clean that, and then we'll bring the vibration a lot higher and cleaner on the whole planet, and then we don't have to go through horrendous disasters. We'll go through gentle shifts like little small volcanoes erupting or small earthquakes. A series of small things that will take place in nature if we clear that negative energy. If we don't clear the negative energy, when the energy is coming in from the solar flares, with the solar flares from the sun, and the energy coming in from the galactic center in the Milky Way, and it hits the Earth, wherever the negative energy is, it will get hit hard, and that's where the Earth will rip and tear apart, volcanoes will erupt, tornadoes are activating. All this kind of nature's forces is bringing an awareness to humanity, but humanity is not getting the message of why it's happening, how and why, and the cause and effect of this kind of information. So with the work that is being represented by the work that Earth Wisdom Foundation is doing, it's a non-profit organization that was put together by some friends who saw the importance of the work that was being done because of the dreams that were coming in May of 2008 to heal the Super Yellowstone Volcano, and to send a message about the warring and fighting in Iran and Iraq and Afghanistan with the vibration that was closing the geysers and the vents that were, you know, the steam releasing was closed and sealed. So we had to do an acupuncture, acupressure ceremony on 19 sacred sites with sound and prayers of all nations and cultures to come together and set on those 19 places in a circle and one in the middle in the Grand Tetons. So on these sacred sites, it's the healing the holes and the cuts. So these are some of the things that are going on the equinoxes and solstices because of the high energy that comes in, multiplies the power, that increases our prayer power with our intention to heal the web of life. And we look into it, and whatever we see there, we put in a decree and we ask it to be erased and cleaned from the record of the elements. And we do ceremonies like the Kogis have told me. They do them for 9 days. Well, we're doing them for 1 day, 2 days, or 3 days. But if we could do 9 days of clearing the energy in the environment in our areas, we would have a beautiful, pristine, gentle climate return, the best that we could get it. And it would show that. And it's been happening in all these ceremonies that have been sponsored by these dreams and visions through the Earth Wisdom Foundation, through the dreams and visions of all nations and cultures who have come together to to support healing for Mother Earth and healing those environments in the elements of the earth, wind, fire, and water.
Oh.
And this is what I were asking humanity to consider to do with us, to join us and to support coming to the rescue of Mother Earth, will be coming to the rescue of themselves and also healing within themselves, is healing their emotions and thoughts of negativity, greed, materialism, egos, angers, hatreds, jealousies, judgments, etc., etc., etc. Because if humanity would realize that every word, thought, action that they're doing is recorded in the elements every day. The things I'm saying today are being recorded in the environment right now. And so I'm asking it to be as pure and beautiful, as beautiful, as beautiful ever was, without pointing fingers at anyone or saying any negative thing about anyone, but asking all things to be cleared and cleansed and everyone to forgive each other, turn towards each other again. Most cultures have turned their backs on each other, to turn and face each other and realize in history it wasn't some of us who in past life did that, but now in this lifetime we didn't do that to each other, but some of us did in past lives, and a lot of people don't believe in past lives. But the thing is, many of the cultures in humanity do believe in reincarnation, and then many don't. But the thing is, this is what we believe. And when we understand this, we clean the record of our past lives 7 generations back, 7 generations of negativity, and we clear our path. We clear our forefathers and our mothers before us, grandfathers and grandmothers, of their negativity, and a lot of them were positive. They had a lot of positivity going on too, but all of that is still replaying in ourselves. For the past, the present, and the future live simultaneously with each other. And when we can recognize this, we know that we're all related to each other, because we are all what the elements are made of. The trees are made of the elements. The animals, the birds, the grasses, the plants, the wood, our houses, the glass, the forks, the spoons, the rocks, everything is what we are made of. So we're related to everything. So whatever we do, we affect everything with every word, every thought, every action. And the messages of the original instructions, which were given in the cultures and traditions of the covenants of the tribes, was that we were to share all of these ceremonies with each other. We never owned them. They were given to us because the Great Spirit and Mother Earth said, we'd like you to make an agreement, a covenant with us. If you would do these certain things, here's the way of the earth. Here's the way of peace. Here's the way of love. Here's the way of gratitude. Here's the way that subsistence will be given to you. And everything will be beautiful when you sing these songs of love for all of creation. Give gratitude and thankfulness. Everything will be beautiful. Whatever you ask for, you receive it in the most sacred way. If you follow these instructions of nature's laws, it will be beautiful. But if you choose not to follow them, you will change the beauty, and this will surely teach you lessons. And those are the prophecies of the earthquakes, tornadoes, fires, floods, droughts, the food getting sick, poisons and toxins and chemicals would come because of greed and materialism, and then the world would become sick. And what has happened? Exactly that. Now, time would come when humanity would awaken to this kind of information. And so it's been a journey to bring this awareness to the nations because of how we go out and we do the work. So if anyone would like to help us, we'd like you to consider to support the Earth Wisdom Foundation. And it takes a lot of funds and finances to get this work done, so we're doing a gathering in the Grand Tetons, and while I was in, or not just myself, my wife and myself and another man, we travel and talk to many of the cultures of the Mayan priestesses and priestesses. I mean, both males and females, priests and priestesses. And they shared a lot of information about what was coming for the future, and so did the Aztec people. But they have different names in their groups, the Aztecs and the Maya, that they would like us to consider to come north to join us in the ceremonies and to do many of these kinds of things. But it takes lots of funds and finances to get them north. They have to pay for visas. So it's like they have to pay off their government down there in order to fly out of their countries. And it's kind of a shame what's going on with that, but that's the process in order to get them north. And then the plane ticket and the paying for the visas cost money. So we'd like to get them to bring messages, because that's the prophecy of the Eagle and Condor, that the heart would be healed in the north when the people of the south would come north. It's the heart energy, the green heart energy, the heart chakra represents the emerald grid. We put love back into the web of life, but they would bring a recognition to this information if we could get them north. And I really pray that this will happen for us, and if anyone wants to help us, please get in touch with me. You can go to earthwisdomfoundation.net. My phone number is there, and my email there, and all that is there. And, you know, this will cost who knows how much. But, you know, we're hoping the one plane ticket and to get someone here is probably, to take care of them, is around $3,000 to $5,000 per person. So we would like to see 8 people come up, males and females, husbands and wives, of grandfathers and grandmothers, wisdom carriers, to come north. And if we could get that many here, we could at least send a message into the web of life to activate the people who have never heard these messages of the Mayan and the Aztec information, which represents the Mayan calendars and the Aztec calendars, as said many things for us. So the prophecies have said that there would be many disasters that would take place. Well, the consciousness had awakened, and the Kogis were wondering why many of these disasters didn't take place that they were told was going to happen. So they went into prayer, they went back into their prayer circles and prayed, and went into their caves, and when they came back, what they found and what they heard, what was communicated with them by the holy ones or the sacred beings that came to them and told them that humanity had woke up. So therefore, when they cleared the negative energy in the environment and cleared up their energies and their actions of having more love and compassion and caring for all that it is around them, then that changed the disasters from happening, stopped them. And sure, some did take place, but the other ones that were prophesied to take place didn't take place. And that was because humanity and others who joined in these ceremonies around the world are doing their own ceremonies along with us. This was the work that has been done to bring a beautiful world. And right now, these are what we ask cultures to consider to do. And
hello?
Again, you know, they call me Blue Thunder because I bring water and rain. I communicate with the blue light that comes from the thunder being energy. And blue brings truth and wisdom. And I take direction from the white light, which is peace, which represents a spiritual being of peace known as White Eagle, who calls himself the chief of the chief of the chief of the chief of the chief chief chiefs, who is a spiritual messenger, and he calls himself the Great Spirit. And so he talks with me and visits with me and visits with many people around the world. And then some of the spiritual deities or beings, the Holy One, like White Buffalo Woman, and other ancestors and other beings of deities of all nations and cultures are communicating with all of humanity. And a lot of the white people are hearing from the chiefs of the Red Nations. They're hearing from from all cultures, nations, spiritual beings are communicating with all of humanity now. And this is what was said, the prophecies of the melting pot energy would come into the Americas and the United States, in other areas of North America, Mexico, Guatemala, South America, in the Americas, would be known as the New Jerusalem. And in the New Jerusalem would be many cultures would come. And we would awaken humanity in the name of peace, of how the laws of nature work as stewards. And peace cannot come unless people know how the elements work and how it's recorded. So in Iran and Iraq and Jerusalem, if they don't understand this, or even in the United Nations, then how could there ever be peace if the elements aren't cleaned and cleared out of the energies of the surface of the planet? Because everything spins in a circle, and whatever goes out comes back around and replays itself. So history repeats itself because the energy has not been cleared and cleaned. If we want history to repeat peace and love and harmony, then we put the prayers in for that to be, and we clear all the negativity, war, fighting, anger, resentment, suicides, murders, rapes, you name it. and we bless the environment to be cleared of all that actions in the energies that spin for the sacred sites. Give that spinning power, energy, electrical current to all of creation for the life force energy for things to survive. So that electrical current comes from the sacred sites. And on those sacred sites, there's many places of burials, rock art, mountain peaks like Mount Shasta, Mount Rainier, Mount Whitney, San Francisco Peaks, Mount Taylor, and many other places that give us the power to survive. And all of these mountain peaks communicate with each other and they talk to each other.
And we're back. Yeah, I talked with Betty earlier, and Mark, are you on with us?
Yes.
Okay, good deal. Anyway, tonight was supposed to be your show, but that was something, word that Betty wanted to get out. And anyway, now we want to hear about Mark. We want to hear about Badger. Want to hear about the road you've been walking, and tell us about yourself and how you came to learn about all this stuff.
Well, some of what he's talking about sort of fits right in, so I might adjust a little bit about how I was going to talk tonight and maybe change things up a little bit because of his talk. I got involved with the Mayan and different things back in the 87 or somewhere back in there.
Uh-huh.
And I found that it was something when I picked things up, it's like I'd picked up something I'd worked with before. Especially the numbering system. Most
uh-huh.
people focus on the glyphs and the calendars.
Uh-huh.
But they don't realize their numbering system is highly advanced, too.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of people don't look at that. And so, and then I proceeded from there. So there was something that really just kind of clicked with me. And they also say that when you're dealing with the symbols and the glyphs and different things, that you can read them or you can listen to them. In other words, they will communicate to you.
Fascinating.
So it's not an issue of just reading a glyph or a symbol. It's an issue of this setting up a communications link. In a Christian sense, I guess you could say that you're initiating a phone call to God through the Holy Spirit.
Yeah,
in essence.
The Greeks would call it an oracle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so there's a set up a communication path. And this will... this will teach you, and you can learn quite a bit. And so many things that I've learned are through that, but then also I found that people tend to need to get stuff into their head. So it gives you something to work with, a language and things, tools to work with. So you do have to learn some things and put up some effort and do some things there, too, to enhance your communication abilities. And right now we have a lot of opportunities for that because we have a lot of people doing incredible amounts of work and books and things all over the place to learn. Everything from Mayan stuff to Lakota to quantum physics and holographic universe and the traditional things as well coming into play. So we have a wealth of things to tap into. Our biggest problem probably is just simply learning how to pick up these pieces and work with each other and share with each other and not let our egos and all of our, I want to be the biggest guy or the big shot, get in the way.
Yeah.
We need to take all these pieces together and then start working together. Much like we pick up the pieces, we need to pick up each other and work with each other.
Mm-hmm.
And if we do that, I think we'll do very well. And I think I heard a lot of that in his message of that same idea. And he tied in a lot about forgiveness, a lot about things in the past and healing things in the past. And I have a good friend, Jim Beard. He may be listening tonight, but he's spoken about the healing of the ancestral memory. And I heard a lot in Benny's message talking about a very similar thing. People healing things possible. We know through quantum physics and stuff right now that you can do a prayer, you can issue forgiveness, and it'll move backwards in time. It will change things.
Mm-hmm.
We tend to think that the past is set in stone. It's not set in stone.
That is a Hebrew principle. That, believe it or not, that is taught in the Talmud and by the Hebrew mystics. Yep.
It's true.
That's the power of forgiveness. And that's one of the big keys. He mentioned that word, and it's one of the big things that we need to do because we have so many problems. We have so many historical things. We have wars. We have this done wrong. We have so many things that have been screwed up, people doing this to each other in their own families, you know, problems. And you have different people writing about generational healing in the family, right? Just going through and healing things in a person's own family can help. So that would be something I think that all the people can do first. Work at home, close to your family, then move out from there into, you know, cultures, religions, natives, this, that, and other, whatever's gotten hurt. But start close to where you're at with yourself and then work through your family and your family genealogy and then move outward from there. And if we do that, I think we're going to be pretty amazed at what can happen.
Mm-hmm.
Because we have something else very interesting that's occurring, I believe, right now. We are potentially moving, the way I see it, the way it's been given to me, we're moving from one Zulkan system into another.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if anybody that I'm aware of knows what that means.
Well, Hunbot's man, I was watching a YouTube of him. He says there are many calendars.
Mm-hmm. There are many calendars, but there's one Zulkan calendar.
Right, right. No, he was talking about there's many, many different mind calendars that people don't know about.
Yeah. So, but I think that we're getting ready to move into a change that changes that, and it's according to a pattern that's used, several patterns that are used in creation itself. And those patterns, it's just like a plant. A plant grows. We're growing. And you reach a certain point where plants do something a little bit more. They finish a spin, or our DNA finishes a spin, or something, and you move into the next level of a spiral.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe on a very high level, that's where we're getting ready to do something like that. And when you're doing things like that, you're moving from one type of energy frequency domain into another. And that, when you have energy shifts like that, that's always a good time to be calm and peaceful.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like a birth, you know. If a birth is happening, there's a new life occurring, right? There's something happening. And everybody can be tense, uptight, and, you know, it's going to be not too enjoyable. But if everybody just calm and relaxed and peaceful, they turn down the lights, they do all the things, they can make that birth process very, very easy and actually, you know, pretty enjoyable, actually.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just an issue of the change in frequencies. And we're seeing that right now in the Earth. If we look at the geometry of where all this energy is accumulating, these earthquakes and such, we'll notice that there a large number of them are occurring at certain latitudes, in between a latitude belt on the side of the equator. It's in about a little bit south or north of 20 degrees. And if you look at that, you'll see that an awful lot of the energy is in that, moving in that area. The pyramid of the sun at Teotihuacan is sitting exactly on that point.
Huh.
That's probably why it's there. And it has some... So if we look at that, we'll see energy is moving through there. And he mentioned the thing about sacred sites and all this, but the pyramids themselves, if the work on torsion energy fields and electromagnetic fields and all that, which ties in with what he was talking about, if we measure at the top coming out of one of those pyramids, they'll find the exact frequency that's coming out the top of that is a green frequency, which is exactly the color of the heart chakra. And Benny just talked about that heart chakra. And that obviously the heart chakra being cleared is going to have a lot to do with forgiveness. You know, because of not forgiving and holding that kind of stuff inside of us will create an immense problem within us. Well, if it's inside of us, the holographic principle says if it's within, it's without.
Yep.
So if we work with ourselves and look at what our problems with forgiveness are, no matter what they are, and the harder they are, the more important they are to work on, the bigger contribution you make. So the people that are causing you the worst trouble, the people who are the greediest on the planet, the murderers, the biggest pillagers, those, that's actually probably a good place to start.
Yeah.
Because those are enormous energy problems, blockages in the forgiveness there. We were told that. We were told that, what was it, the Sermon on the Mount. I ask you not to forgive just your people that's easy, your friends and stuff. That's easy. That's piece of cake. And he said, I ask you to forgive your enemies, maybe your worst enemies, because that is the greatest profit. You gain the most from doing that.
That's tough.
So, and that's exactly what we need to be doing. And it will benefit all of us. So we're sort of getting the encouragement to do that. And I suspect in one way or the other, people in the past, you know, past cycles, they dealt with these things too. Most of the traditional things, say, when we move through world cycles at the end, it was a mess. You know, greed, corruption ran amok. I mean, obviously, you know, they had a lot of problems and a lot of things that they had to work on the forgiveness.
Oops. Did we lose you? Well, we seem to be having some problems. Folks, there was a major power outage in Denver today, and so we seem to be having a problem. So, tell you what. Let's play a song here real quick, and let's see if I can get Mark back on the line.
And I told them not to dig for coal, or if they did, the eagle would die. They didn't listen. They didn't listen. They didn't listen to me. And I told them if the eagle.
Hi, this is Mark and Mir. Please leave a name, number, and message, and we'll get back with you. Bye.
To leave a voicemail.
They didn't listen. They didn't listen. They didn't listen to me. And if there was no keeper of the land, machine would commence to destroy the sky.
What?
They didn't listen. They didn't listen. They didn't listen to me. And I told them if they destroyed the land, man would have to move into the sea. And I told them if they destroy the
sea. Oh, folks, we're back with Mark. Had a little problem with his cell phone. Anyway, I hope you remember where you were, because I don't.
Well, we were on the green energy.
Ah.
That comes out of the top of a pyramid. And it turns out that the Mayans, if people look in the Mayan Popol Vuh, they speak exactly of this when they're moving through a period of darkness and they're moving into the new cycle. And they speak of the green road or the green path. And I'll read a little bit here from it, okay?
No, go for it.
Says, may there be no blame, obstacle, want, or misery. Let no deceiver come behind or before them. May they neither be snared nor wounded, nor seduced nor burned, nor diverted below the road nor above it. May they neither fall over backward nor stumble. Keep them on the green road, the green path. May there be no blame or barrier for them through any secrets or sorcery of thine. May any nurturers and providers be good before thy mouth and thy face. Thou heart of sky, thou heart of earth, thou bundle of flames, the four sides, the four corners. May there only be light with continuity within, before thy mouth and thy face, thou God. That's the last half of that prayer.
And that was from what document?
That's from the Popol Vuh.
Mm-hmm. Thought it sounded familiar.
And so they're speaking of that and the green road. And the green road, or the green path in the Mayan medicine wheel, would be found in the center.
That way so it is on the Ketua four directions. You know, it's the level line that runs from east to west. And the Hebrew tradition says that at the beginning of creation, when the Creator spoke, he shone to speak the creation into existence, he showed a green light, which that started the creation.
Mm-hmm. And coincidentally, when I was given a new Zulcan calendar, the glyphs that I was given were all green.
Mm.
And one of them, each of them has an energy associated with it. The first one is balance. The second one was joy. The third one was purpose. The fourth one was peace. And the fifth one was harmony, or Hunebku,
mm-hmm.
Creator, the one giver of movement and measure.
Mm-hmm.
So, they were all green glyphs. The Mayan word on green is Yax. So, they would say a new sun. They would say Yax Kin. So Yax would be green and Kin would be sun or day or sun, or as a world cycle, because they would say you're moving from the first sun to the second sun to the third sun to the fourth to the fifth and to the sixth sun. So they go through cycles like that. But the color of the green would be in the center. The color green would also relate to the Quetzal bird. In the prophecy of the eagle and the condor, Mayan elder Don Alejandro talks about the eagle and the condor, but he also talks about the Quetzal, and the Quetzal being in the center between the condor and the eagle. And of course the Quetzal bird is going to relate to Quetzalcoatl. Quetzal bird has two colors primarily on it, green and red. And those Quetzal feathers are they use for their headdress. It's a symbol of authority. My Quetzal would relate, the feathers would relate to the wind. So we get back to one, I know, probably one of your favorite topics too, the Lord of the Wind and the Water. One of the symbols that's associated with him is a circle with an equilateral cross in it, inside that circle. So the center of that circle where those two cross beams come together would be exactly the point, the apex of the pyramid or capstone, and also where that green energy light is coming out of. I suspect that you would see exactly the same thing if they went into one of Benny's medicine wheels and they measured the energy coming in, out of the top of the center of that medicine wheel.
Mm-hmm.
They'd probably find exactly that same energy frequency that's coming out, because that medicine wheel, if they draw a top up on top, that capstone for it, it would look like a, basically a teepee, and that is basically the same geometric topology as a pyramid. The conical shape. Some of the Russians have actually built conical pyramids. So it's basically the same idea. So, but the energy frequency is what's interesting there, and that particular energy has been shown to be very significant. So I suspect that all tells us if we couple to that, and we couple that within ourselves into forgiveness, and move that through that geometry, that shape, then that will probably make it work a lot better. It's a key component. So everything's now working with each other, just like it should.
Wow. Well, I just know you're really gifted to understand all this. You know, when I first started looking into this, I went, you know, do you know what MEGO is, M-E-G-O? MEGO syndrome? It stands for My Eyes Glaze Over.
Your eyes glaze over?
Yeah, when I started reading about the Mayan prophecy, my eyes glazed over. I went, you know, anyway. But I tell you what, it's sure gotten my attention.
Well, it's actually fairly simple. So it's... people should, the parts that they maybe not quite catch on to, they just don't worry about that too much and go with the parts that they can. So maybe they don't understand in every little detail, but if they look, all they should do is look at the big picture. Look at the parts of the story that they do understand and go with that, and they can catch up with the other stuff later.
Mm-hmm. Yep,
you know,
that's a great way to learn. You know, learn what you understand, and then go into more depth later. Sure, that works for me.
But we'll kind of go in reverse here, and we'll back up in terms of kind of moving back to what I was kind of originally going to start with. And so, if people have a pencil or paper, or can get one, it might help. But if you don't, it'll be pretty simple enough that you can do it in your mind. So the first thing is you draw a point. And then around that point, you draw a circle. Now this particular pattern is set, has many things about it that's not always obvious. It's simple, and sometimes we miss simple things, but the center of the circle is where everything came from, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it moved out an equal distance to form the circle. Now that circle, or that point, we could elevate that point. Let's go to the circle on the outside of the circle, and let's draw points at the four directions. So on the circle, we'll draw a little point where each of the four directions, north, south, east, west. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now we draw a line, so we form an equidistant cross between in the circle. between those points on the outer side of the circle. So from north to south, east to west, we draw a line.
Mm-hmm.
Now we have a circle with a cross. So now the Hopi also put three more little circles inside each of those pie slices.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the Hopi shield symbol.
Right, yeah. So, but this symbol now that we have is a symbol that we saw, they said that used to appear in the palms of the person they called Quetzalcoatl or Lord of Wind and Water or all the other names that he was given. And we were told that he could see from one world cycle into the next.
Hmm.
Where in some stories, we are also told that he was the one that designed the what they call the Aztec sunstone or the calendar stone.
Mm-hmm.
He actually basically commissioned it and designed it. Now, if you look at that stone, you'll see it's a circle.
Sure.
A bunch of circles. And it will have, pointing coming out of the center of it, it will have four directions, just like what we just drew.
You know, the fascinating thing about this is, you know, going back to the mid-1960s, we've had one of those in our house because when my mom and dad bought a house in Newport Beach, California, and the one summer I went to Vicksburg, and on the way back we stopped at dad wanted a bunch of, we had to build a brick wall out in front, but he wanted some wrought iron. And so crossed over into Ciudad Juarez, you know, from El Paso, and brought back a whole bunch of stuff, including, you know, if you go to Mexico and, you know, there's a thousand people that make those plaster, you know, Aztec calendars. But I had one of those in the house like forever. So, yeah, it's always been around, so...
Now, if we look at that, the Aztec calendar or the sunstone, on the outer ring up at the top, there's a 13 Akatal or 13 reed, and that is mentioned in the Song of Quetzalcoatl, and it also mentions the day for Caban or for Olin, which is in the center of the Aztec sunstone. So now we have the outer ring connected to the center ring, the outer and the inner. And we'll go through some of this meaning a little bit, because they would do for between those are actually days in the calendar. So the 13 reed is day 13, and the 4 olin or 4 caban is the 17th. So it's going 13, 14, 15, 16, 17. And they would do the ceremonies on those days. So those ceremonies would literally connect the outer ring to the inner. The outer ring, that 13 reed or symbol at the top, is sitting between the tails of two serpents. One serpent is spinning going clockwise, the other one's going the other way, counterclockwise. So one of those serpents, you could say, is the eagle, and the other one, you could say, is the condor.
Hmm.
They're moving in opposite rotational directions. These are the energy fields or the torsion fields of the Earth and everything, actually.
Hmm.
DNA, molecules, everything has a little torsion field moving around it.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
if people don't understand what a torsion field is, every little electric motor is a little donut that's wrapped in electrical wire, and it's called a toroid. And it's a magnetic field, and that's what am I right? That's what Tesla invented. You know, the alternating current. It's a
right.
Toroid.
So the now the these two serpents, the Hopis speak of two serpent brothers at the poles. Which
yep.
is what's on that what's on the Aztec sunstone, those two serpents. Mm-hmm. Now
well,
between
they have a clan in common. The Hopi originally had a parrot clan.
Mm-hmm.
And which is a clan from the south, so they are related, no doubt about that.
Oh yeah, and they talk about they were, according to some of their stories, they potentially migrated all the way to the south part of South America.
Mm-hmm.
So they were potentially all over the place, but those two serpents that are on that stone. The 13 reed symbol, or 13 akatal, is sitting between their tails. Okay? That would connect that symbol to the stars of the Pleiades.
Hmm.
And because the stars of the Pleiades, one of the names for them is basically a snake's tail. So the tail of the snake, which would be sitting there. Now, it turns out that the Pleiades has a certain orbital relationship with our solar system. I believe Edgar Cayce even spoke about this. He spoke about both, he spoke about the Pleiades and Arcturus.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's mentioned in the Book of Revelations, that's the seven candlesticks. Behold, I hold
mm-hmm.
the seven candlesticks in my right hand.
Right. And you can find, if you actually take and you map out, it's when it, right after it, it says the seven stars of those seven candlesticks are the angels or the messengers of the seven churches.
Mm-hmm.
If you take the seven churches that are listed in the Book of the Apocalypse, the name of those, and you go look those up where they were geographically on the
mm-hmm.
ground, and you take the stars of the Pleiades and you align them in a certain way, you'll find that those seven churches, those seven cities, are aligned or mapped exactly to those seven stars of the Pleiades. They'll match.
Wow.
And they'll match so that the star of Maya, or M-A-I-A, will align with the church of Ephesus, which is where St. John and Mary went to. Mary, Maya.
Yeah, that's right.
So, it's a pretty interesting match. Dead on target. So now some of the Mayan elders say that some of their wisdom and some of their things came from the Pleiades, which matches exactly why that
mm-hmm.
symbol sitting between the tails of those two serpents or those two torsion energy fields that govern the structure of reality, it's sitting there right between. So that tells us a little bit more, and that would be the starting day. That symbol would be the starting day of the ceremonial cycle that's in the Song of Quetzalcoatl, specifically in the Song of the Sun. So that's on the outer ring. Then that particular ceremony is going to go from that day to the next 4 days till it gets to 4 Kaban or 4 Olin, the movement. And that is what we see in the center of the sunstone. We see a 4 and a very large Olin glyph, and that Olin glyph is what is composed, within it is the world cycles of the suns. The first sun, which would be the 4 Jaguar, 4 Ix, and then the 4 Ik, and then the 4 Kuak, and then 4 Moloch, I believe is the way to go. And then in the center would be 4 Ahau, the end of the long count. So we've now just connected all these things, all these concepts together. We've connected the serpents, the bidirectional spin, the magnetic fields of the Earth into the ages or the cycles of the Earth, which also locks onto the precessional cycle. And that precessional cycle also, if people go look at it, it relates to the Stars of the Pleiades. And Edgar Cayce mentioned that cycle as well. So now we've just connected all this stuff together, and guess what? There's probably a very large torsion field that encompasses our solar system, the Pleiadian system, and probably the Arcturian system, all that at the same time. So in that particular torsion field, we are all within that one field. So it would make sense. Now, one of those fields is what we would call the eagle, and the other one would be the condor. And Mayanel Verdon Alejandro talks about this being, and he talks about the fingers of the hand, or that we're different fingers. Some of us are red, white, blue, purple, whatever color we are, who cares? But we're on the same hand. So
yeah,
we are united. And it turns out that hand symbol also is something that was associated with the one that was called the Lord of the Wind of the Water, who taught peace, who taught forgiveness. The first thing he would do when he went places is get people to quit killing each other.
Yeah.
That was the first thing, stop fighting and killing each other, you know. And his symbol, we see all over North America, South America, we see a hand. And inside that hand, we see different other symbols. We see the cross symbol, like we just said, the circle with the cross.
Mm-hmm.
Or sometimes we see a symbol with a hand that has an eye in it. Sometimes we see a symbol that has the a spiral in the hand. Spiral, torsion field, energy field. And so, and it's through those energy fields, we literally really are all united. I mean, this is, we are united so intimately that we, and if we thought about it that way, we'd probably change our attitude maybe real quick. And it
yeah.
turns out that we are probably, in most of the world traditions, the cycle we're in right now is probably in many ways the worst in terms of things falling apart, greed, corruption, and everything just going down the drain, you know. We are in that cycle, part of the cycle. But the good news is we're trying to flip and move into what most of the traditions call the golden age.
Mm-hmm.
We're trying to move into the next one. So we're completing a full cycle, a whole processional cycle. So we're moving back to where we were, you know, 26,000 something years ago. Or 25,000 to 26,000, depending on how
mm-hmm.
you count the years. You know, some people are using 360-day years. Some people are using 365.2422. So we've just gone through. Now, we noticed that on the Aztec sunstone, the glyphs, the calendar glyphs, those glyphs are rotating counterclockwise. They're not rotating clockwise. They're rotating counterclockwise. So that matches the direction that the serpent that's on, as we look at it, on its left-hand side. Now, the Hopi speak about the fact that we might change directions. And they talk about the fact that in the next world cycle, we might move clockwise.
Yeah.
Some of the Earth's traditions speak about, in some cases, the sun rose in the west. Sometimes it rose in the east, like it does now.
Mm-hmm.
If we look at the Hopi Bear Clan tablet, it has five symbols on there that are either a cross by itself, or sometimes it's a circle with crosses on the outside of the circle, right? The cross beams on the outside.
Mm-hmm.
And if we look at that, and it also has a snake or a serpent on there, and that snake is moving a certain direction. If we look at those, we could say, okay, the bottom one next to it would be the first world, second world, third world, fourth world, fifth world. And it has symbols on there that indicate both counterclockwise and clockwise rotation next to each one. They call it a Nakwatch symbol, or universal sign of brotherhood, is what's some people call it too. But if you look at it very carefully, it's actually the same as what's on the Aztec sunstone, these two serpents interlocking with each other. It's the same concept. So what happens if two rotational fields come into balance? In our garden here recently on Earth, we call that zero point. Because zero would be perfect balance, right? Between the two. So how do we achieve that? Well, in many of our cultures and traditions, we're taught how to achieve that. And a big component of achieving that is compassion, forgiveness, love, and that type of stuff is a big part of being able to achieve that balance. Because that alone creates a peace within the person, and the peace inherently leads to balance. And I believe that's what we're trying to do right now. And I believe that's a large part of what Benny's message was about as well.
Yeah. Well, the governments sure seem to be fighting it.
Well, governments, you know, it's kind of like you mentioned Tesla. Tesla knew some of this stuff pretty well, and people like him in one way or another. And one of the interesting things about Tesla and people like him, a lot of them, is they weren't necessarily in it to make a buck. We've had tremendous amounts of people on Earth that wanted just to help other people. And because they wanted that so much, they were given knowledge. They were given knowledge because they cared, and they could be trusted with that knowledge, and they did the best they could. But the problem is, it's like Tesla when he was in Westinghouse, and they came and they were funding him, and they asked him, well, where do we put the meter to measure it so we can charge to send people a bill?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the moment he said, well, you know, there's no meter, they showed him the door, and then he moved to Colorado, I think.
Mm-hmm. Because, yeah, and they came in and stole all of his notes when he died.
So, yeah, we've had an enormous amount of people that. And
the Russians have been following up on his stuff, though.
Oh, yeah.
More than we are.
There's a lot of people. I sat there and wondered about that one time and asked. I asked, like, Spirit. I said, you know, what is going on here? What's happening? I have a feeling there's more to this than just, you know, oil. Which is what people tend to think. And so Spirit came in and said, well, Mark, what if you had a device in your house and it was about, you know, maybe the size of a football or maybe bigger, no bigger than an ice chest, right? What if that thing powered your house and your car and your neighborhood? And I thought, wow, that would be great. Yeah, it would.
I know Sterling Allen, you know, he's an old friend of mine. He was founder of the American Study Group, and he's like the man. He's the go-to guy for free energy, and we'll have to get him on the show.
But here's the thing. A question came back to me. It said, well, if you had this, Mark, wouldn't you wonder how it worked?
Yeah.
I said, yeah, now you say it, yeah, I would kind of wonder how it worked. And I said, there's the problem. Once you saw it, you started wondering, you would start getting answers.
Mm-hmm.
And this leads to more than just getting energy. This leads to when you have this awareness and you're using it the right way, well, you know, we've seen people manifest, what, fishes and loaves?
Yeah.
All kinds of other things. So in other words, you're tapping into that creation, the fundamental thing of creation. When you do that, it's not just oil. It's not just electricity. It's everything. This scares the hell out of them, because if people learn this stuff, and this little football-shaped box or this little energy device is just the beginning. It leads somewhere far more problematic for them, because it cuts off every control point.
Mm-hmm.
Everything where they can say that they're better or have something or leverage something against us and put themselves above us or away from us, you know, it completely takes that away. Because what is it? We call it zero-point technology, a balance. And so, and eventually they can't win because it's going to happen. It's just a question of time, that's all.
Well, it kind of reminds me of the movie that, remember that movie, The Saint?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, that was all about, you know, bringing the wall down in Russia and then finally perfecting a cold fusion. And that was an interesting movie. And all the behind-the-scenes murders and everything that was going on to keep control of the situation and keep the rich rich. Well, that would level the playing field globally. There'd be no poor because that would tear down everything. If you don't need to buy energy, then you know, if you could manifest everything you needed out of thin air, like on Star Trek.
Oh. Why would you need money?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, you only need money to buy something.
I'm sitting here just tingling. I don't get that feeling off of going, whoa, whoa.
But it also means something else that's very important. It also means that each person that's born on Earth or wherever they're born would be able to use whatever talents or skills, gifts, that the creators give them. And they would be able to use that for the benefit of others and be able to make a living at doing it. I don't see a lot of people able to do that on Earth right now.
Wow. That would sure make Lynn Mystic Healer happy. That's her life.
I think it's make a lot of people happy. I mean,
yeah,
we have an incredible waste of talent, human spirit talent on this earth with their each person's creative gifts and they give them for the creator. They're not being used to heal. And we see some people that are able to do it. There are some people breaking through all this. We see people that are amazing healers and stuff. They're not in it to make a buck. You know, and so we're seeing it around us. But the thing is, we look at those things and consider them kind of supernatural or sort of a little bit abnormal. No, those are normal. We're abnormal the way we're operating. That is normal. That is the way things work. What if everything was like that? I mean, our art, our technology, all the things that we think, the stuff we're playing with is interesting. That's nothing, you know. Even something like Star Trek, we don't need a transporter. We've already had people on Earth that did transport themselves without a transporter. I think you referred it to as traveling without a suitcase.
Mm-hmm.
We've had people do all kinds of interesting, amazing things. But there's a lot of times you find there's a common thing. There seems to be something common with those people. One of the things seems to be is they seem to have a great amount of compassion and care and love for others.
Mm-hmm.
That seems to be a key. So what does that mean? That means that forgiveness and things that we were talking about earlier is a very important part of this, because that clears the path, which you might call a good red robe, that clears the path to be able to access these abilities and these energies and tap into creation, work directly with Creator, with the skills you've been given for Creator, but for what purpose? To help each other. There is no other purpose to it, really. And the problem that we have is we have a lot of people that are setting up a power structure and things that places them above everybody else. They're the big shot, and guess what? We're stuck sucking up to them for their power, their money, all the stuff they want. which isn't necessarily good for us. It's gotten to the point where we have prescription drugs on TV that the side effects are many times worse than the problem.
Oh, it's ridiculous.
It's what we see right now. I can think of nothing else better to describe it than spiritual insanity. It's insane.
Everybody, I got a message through Spirit this week. It said things are going to happen in September. I have no idea what it means, but if we all get our heads together and ask Creator what is going to happen in September, maybe we can help manifest it.
Well, we have something. Remember I sent you back what day it was on April 27th. I sent you an email, and I think you sent it out to a few people, and it was about a ceremony. And then Benny mentioned specifically the idea of a 9-day ceremony. And if you look at the email that I sent out, I mentioned, and this ties back into the Aztec Sunstone, so it's going to tie back into that Sunstone, back to the previous world cycle when the Lord of the Wind and Water had that stone designed, and to the ceremony. We are coming up on July 27th, we will be at 13 Reed, which is on the Sunstone between the serpent's tails.
Huh.
So on July 27th, 2012, we will be moving out, and we'll move through, we'll go, and the next day will be one ish, the Jaguar, two men, three Sib, or that's Eagle and Condor, and then the four Olin, which will be on July 31st. And that will bring us into the center of the calendar stone. Now, if we flip that and we keep going, the next day will be 5 Esnam, next day 6 Kuak, next day 7 Ahau, next day 8 Imex, and the last day, the ninth day, 9 Eek. One of your favorite days. That will happen on August 5th.
Really?
So we will, on 13 Reed, and then 9 days later, will be 9 Eek. So that would be, what this will do, is it will, doing a ceremony on these days, will connect into that calendar stone designed to go from the last world cycle into our present world cycle. And it will tie into that same pattern and then go from our world cycle to the next one. And it will be using exactly the timing frequencies set up and used by that stone and by the one they call the Lord of Wind and Water and Quetzalcoatl. And it's a 9-day ceremony.
Yeah.
I guess 10 if you count the first day, but that doesn't usually count. It's kind of a preparatory one, so that might be one that people might want to consider. And so it's important because what this will do is it's not a matter of understanding geometry and stuff like Benny's doing and putting up the medicine wheels and putting up in geographic locations, and that will work. But maybe there's another component, and the other component is the timing frequency. And that's what the Mayan calendar does. It times the cycles. It's like timing the frequency of electricity, right?
Mm-hmm.
So obviously, then its purpose, is one of its abilities, is to put us into a harmonic resonance or frequency with the torsion fields of the planet and maybe a few other torsion fields that are aligned with that one.
Huh.
That will make the ceremony work better, and that's one of the purposes of the Mayan Vulcan calendar, because it operates at certain geometric patterns of creation, so it is a that's why it's so accurate. That's why it's still more accurate than the Gregorian calendar.
Could this harmonic tuning open up special areas on the face of the earth? You know, one of the Mormon prophecies talks about that there will be areas where people will be able to live together in harmony, but, you know, the next valley over, you know, they might be killing each other, but they might not even know about each other. I mean, what are we talking about? Are we talking about...
Well, remember, you know, the torsion fields are around everything, from a molecule up to the planet. So
yeah. It
is possible, and they create the reality of whatever is around them, and they have an axis. So if you do a good enough job of it, then you essentially have moved, you're in alignment with the entire planet, and you're working at that torsion field level, which will support anything else which is within it. Everything else, everything on the planet, all the molecules, that's in our bodies and everything will align itself with the axis of the planet. The Earth's axis on its torsion field will align itself with the sun. The sun will then align its axis with another star, and it will go all the way to the center of the galaxy, and then the center of the galaxy aligns its axis with another central point. If you get all the way back to it, ultimately, all the axes are going to be aligned with Creator.
Boy, my head's kind of spinning here. I'm going, whoa. I used to hang around with, God bless them, you know, New Agers. And a lot of them are, you know, seem to be a little bit nutty, you know, and they talk about vortexes and stuff like that. But, you know, you hear stories and legends about, is it possible that people might be led to certain areas and they could literally walk through to a different place, a different time?
Yeah, we've heard stories about that. I've talked to people that said that they literally looked out the window and they saw a guy coming up their house dressed in a Civil War outfit. I talked to a person that this, and not only, it didn't just happen to them, their sister was with them. And saw
wow, something like that happened to my second wife's mother was sitting on her porch, and she saw three Indians walking up, three guys walking up the street in business suits. They all had the long hair and braids, and she blinked, and then they were in traditional dress, and they just walked by.
There's many accounts of that type of thing happening. I believe there's another account in the book The Holographic Universe by Michael Talbot. That's a very good book for people to read. And he mentioned something in their story. I think it was some people over in Europe and a small group of people, and they turned into some little area, and they walked into some place, and it's like they walked into another area, and they gave a description of what they were seeing. And later on, they found someone was able to take the information they had given, and they were able to find exactly what day that was in the past.
Well, maybe
it's in his book. The details are in his book.
Maybe this could account for the hollow Earth, you know, North Pole entrance to the Middle Earth. Wow, it could account for a lot of things, possibly.
That's a possibility. I don't know. I don't know. I've read certain things about that. I think it's a possibility.
Yeah, Brooks Agnew, that's been his whole deal.
I know when I was visiting with Grandfather Martin down with him, he brought out a picture of that, of a picture of the Hollow Earth type thing.
Oh, yeah, he probably had the book published back in the 50s.
Well, it's a paper that he had, but... He's a very interesting person. He's a very nice. Of all the elders I've met, he's one of the ones that I thought was really nice, pretty humble, and just what I liked about him. He just had this a lot of sense of curiosity about him.
Yeah.
He was a person that was curious, liked to learn, liked to explore, and just very nice, willing to share too. You know, and so. He's one of the few that's been like that. I've met a few that were sort of like that, but he's one of the ones that was probably the most like that. And when we showed up at his place, he had been out working all day. And we went there originally in the morning, and he was gone. And so we went over some of the other mesas, did some other things, came back later that night, and he was in the car in front of us, so I guess he got a ride, and they dropped him off, and it was dark. And he had been out working in the fields most of the day, probably. So I thought, you know, sitting and talking with someone like me is probably the last thing he wants to do, right?
Yeah.
But he opened the door. We go in. He has a table in the center of his house there. It's a one-room house. Has a table there and has a kerosene Coleman stove above it. That's his light. And it was pretty funny because he asked Adam to light it, right? Adam sitting there messing with it, and Grandfather Martin kind of takes it from him, and he grabs the pump, and he like boom, 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 pumps it. You know, he's like got, seems like he's about three times or five times stronger than Adam was.
Yeah.
And so we got it lit, and then we're sitting there talking, and I'm showing him some stuff, and then he runs over to the one side of his house over there where he has some shelves and stuff, and he runs over and grabs some papers and stuff, brings them back to the table, and starts showing me stuff. And I didn't realize at the time, but he couldn't really hear very good. So, he was communicating primarily by showing stuff, right?
Yeah.
And after a little while, he'd run over and grab something else.
Yeah.
Well, but I got the distinct overwhelm. The thing that was most interesting to me about him was just that he was just so nice and hospitable,
mm-hmm.
and curious. He liked to learn. He liked to do stuff. And I thought to myself, if all these other elders, leaders, were like him, and we all got together, and we all put everything on the table and shared it.
Mm-hmm.
We wouldn't have a problem.
What village did he live in?
He's on Third Mesa, Hope Villa.
Okay.
Well, I don't know. He's. I'm not sure he's still there right now because I heard he was down in Sedona and then he was maybe back on the res. So I'm not sure where he is right now. Kimberly can probably tell you.
Mm-hmm.
She probably has a good idea because she keeps a little bit better tabs on him than I do.
Yeah, we're going to have her on a couple weeks.
I think that that's the thing I think that really is needed right now is a lot of the kind of Native people need the leaders and stuff need to be doing that. I mean, what kind of example are they setting if they're not sharing, if they're not willing to bring these things out, work together? And I mean, what are they going to do? Wait till the earth rolls over and everybody falls off?
Well, I know, back when the first elders that came out, I mean, they didn't let their names be known. When Robert Ghostwolf arranged for them to go on Art Bell, and,
uh-huh.
and for like 3 or 4 hours or whatever it was, and
yeah.
By the way, we've got those recordings, and but they were scared. They said that they've been threatened.
Oh yeah, you look at what Dan Abahama and the four guys
yeah.
that wrote the Hopi newsletter.
Mm-hmm.
They have the Hopi police force out looking for them to arrest them. Crazy. I mean, that's what was happening to him. I mean,
that's quite touchy, yeah. Do you know what they were going to, what was the charge going to be?
Probably something like, exploiting tribal customs or something.
Yeah. Well.
Divulging tribal, secret information or something.
Yeah. Yeah. David Monongi, he was the number one editor. He was Teacher Zula Brinkerhoff's adopted father. And, Zula, she started being their spokesman in the late 50s. And
mm-hmm.
she had been a personal secretary to the governor of Utah and an author. And, she told the story of David. She said, is there anything I could get you? He was going to come up for a visit.
Mm-hmm.
And, He said they like peaches. And he says I'd like to get a peach tree, and I'll take you to the nursery and you can have anyone you want. And so they started look. They got to the nursery and started looking around, and she started taking them to the biggest, nicest looking one. He wanted the little most puny one that they had there, and they made it grow. They hand carry water out to them and. Plant it just such a way. Of course, they create water reservoirs around all of them, and I saw a picture online of, you know, some of their orchards. It was just, you know, in, planted in sand.
Mm-hmm.
And how they kept them alive, I don't know. And yeah,
well, they understand the, you know, they say, you know, be one heart. Don't have two hearts, be one-hearted. And that one heart's going to connect into their energy field. So, and then the we know through various work right now that water is very receptive to that thought energy. So, you know, if you're doing prayers and stuff over water, it's like a tape recorder recording what you're doing.
Yeah.
And the biggest, if you're holding a glass of water, there's actually a lot more water that's holding the glass than the glass itself, because our bodies are what percent water.
Well, the Israelis, I mean, they, you know, they supply oranges to most of Europe, and their secret was is when they planted their trees, they dig a hole, and they throw an old, well, they had a lot of those World War II cotton duck mattresses.
Mm-hmm.
They throw that in the hole, and then plant the tree on top of that, and the water wouldn't just run right away from the roots, and and then they graduated to using augers and augering down about 10 feet and planting the trees in like a 10-inch PVC pipe, so the root just goes right straight down, and they drip irrigated, and they invented all this drip irrigation. Stuff that you see. Now I'm using it in my garden right now. I got it from dripirrigation.com. Real simple to set up, and you only use about 20% of the water that you would normally if you just sprinkle like from a sprinkler, because it goes right there. It doesn't have much of a chance to evaporate because it goes, you know, in some cases it's actually buried underneath the soil. And
I've looked at those myself. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're real simple to set up. I set up a system for 80 fruit trees, a place that we rented in Crestone, Colorado. And the original owner just had put a bunch of hoses out there and punched holes. And that was great, but I put in metered. Every tree had a, based on the size of its canopy, is how much water it got. And because you can get that information out, you know, on the internet now, and tailor make it, and figure out how much water each tree needs, and then back off to 0.80, and then you got the optimum amount of water, and it's very very conservative and very sustainable. And then it got the whole system put up, and then it's in August. Let's see, in July it started to rain, and it rained about every day. It about got rain. Didn't even hardly get a chance to use it. I'm sure the people will come along behind us. But yeah, I love doing stuff scientifically like that, and because it's just efficient.
Yeah. Well, it also, but if the another key part, though, that you have to back up and look at, too, is the scientific aspect is interesting, but there's something that goes along with it, and that is what got you doing it in the first place.
Well, my mother's parents were master gardeners. They they were both past presidents of the Mississippi Hermaculus or Daylily Society. My sister and I both had prized daylilies named after us, and they lived on six acres and grew everything you can imagine.
Yeah,
I remember, you know, when I was home with my grandparents, you know, I'd get up with Grandpa, you know, every morning at 5:45, and you know, I'd get up and go to the bathroom and come in and sit. It was always dark, and he'd be out there, you know, and he'd pour his coffee, and he'd pour it into the saucer, and then blow it to cool it, and then pour, you know, like people do. And then he'd go out in the yard, and he'd, you know, he'd get 5 or 6 hours of work. You know, he was done by, you know, 10 o'clock before it even started getting hot. You know, so he'd work, you know, 6 to 7 to 8, 9, 10 o'clock, and he'd have everything done. But he'd be out there at the crack of dawn and get it all done before it got hot, because it gets hot down there in Mississippi. And it gets hot here in the summer, but it's muggier down there. But they get more rain. When it rains down there, it just rains bullfrogs. And but it's, they never get a frost down there, and the kudzu was imported from Japan years ago. And when you go down in those areas, you see whole areas that are taken over by kudzu. And kudzu is fantastic for food, but it's kind of a pest. And a lot of people don't like it, and they say that the way to get rid of kudzu is to mulch heavily with concrete blocks, you know. But you can eat it. You can eat the stuff. It's one of the best foods there is for salads. But yeah, that's why I'm doing it. And then all my wives have been gardeners. But this time it's all on me because Linda's got back trouble, and so this is my project, you know. And before it's been, you know, something that the wife did and I watched, but this is mine.
Well, sounds like you're doing well.
Yeah, I just got the first plant by the signs, and I just got the above ground crops in, and
you got to learn how to sing to them, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember reading that Dan Avahamo, the guy that helped him write the book, he said he didn't really understand him very well until one night he said Dan Avahama went across the road or field, grabbed a little baby ear of corn, and he was sitting there on the front of his old house or shack or whatever it was, and he said he was holding that little ear of corn just like you would hold a baby, you know, a child, and he was singing to it.
Huh.
And he said it was at that moment when he saw it that he understood why when Dan Avahama and stuff would come to the city and stuff, and he had him in a fancy hotel, nice food, and he said he didn't understand why he always wanted to go home so fast. And he said when he was on that porch and saw him doing it, he said he understood what it meant when they said that they were blended with the land. They and the land had become one. And so he didn't like to be away from it.
Huh.
It's a different philosophy.
Speaking of singing, some years ago, there was a guy that developed something called Sonic Bloom. And he was nominated for a Nobel Prize. And what he discovered was that he discovered the frequency that birds sing at activates the pores to open in the morning to open up on leaves, and basically it's a sound that just oscillates. It goes like. And he just put that into some pretty music, so you could play it over a loudspeaker in your garden or in your greenhouse or whatever. So we use that. And we had a 35-foot greenhouse. This house that we rented in Crestone, we had one patio tomato plant, and in 4 or 5 months, it completely took over that greenhouse. Completely, because that man is Dan Carlson, and Dan, last year about this time, he just dropped off the face of the earth. I ordered something from him, didn't get it, and I finally called the phone number that he had listed up there in Wisconsin to talk to the lady. No, he's just not here. He left town. Nobody knows where he went, but. Yeah, it's really interesting. But he discovered on every leaf there are thousands of small openings. They're called stomas. They're less than a thousandth of an inch across that allows oxygen and water to pass out of the leaf or to breathe, transpire, while other gases move in to be transformed. And he says during dry conditions, these stomata close to prevent a wilting plant from drying out completely. And he just discovered the sounds that that opened them up. And... But yeah, the government of Indonesia, after the, I guess they had a volcanic eruption and the tsunami, they kind of credited him with saving, you know, the agriculture of their country. But nobody knows where he is. But he discovered this. You can go to originalsonicbloom.com, but don't buy anything because he's not there. Nobody's attending. Anyway, it's just disappeared. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who knows?
Well, yeah. That's it reminds me of the thing with the bumblebees because they proved mathematically that a bumblebee can't fly, right?
Uh-huh.
Some guys figured that out anyway, and then they figured out, well, no, it can fly, and the reason is the bumblebee's wings and behind the bumblebee's on its head, but right around where it's behind his ear or something, there's a resonant chamber, and its wing beats and curvature of his wings is working with that resonant chamber and is creating a sort of an anti-gravity effect. So it goes to show, when we look around and we look at what Creator has made and the way it's designed, we can find some pretty interesting things. And it all works together. All we have to do is figure out how to do the same thing. Just copy what works,
Yeah, well, yeah, Mike, you've corresponded with my friend Robert Three Eagles, and he understands about resonant frequencies, and he's accidentally done things that would be looked on as alchemy. He just stumbled onto things, but that's how the oil companies, that's how they find underground, and the mining companies, they just fly over with, they look right down into the earth because they charge the earth with the frequency of whatever they're looking for, and then they tune their nuclear resonance magnetometers, and they look right down into the earth. And I think that's the reason why we're in Afghanistan, because that's the new battery technology, and they just announced a couple months ago that Afghanistan's got the largest deposit of lithium on the planet. So I'm going,
They seem to have found several sources of rare minerals and stuff over there in that area. Mm-hmm.
And the Chinese, the rare earth magnets. This is big. They've got the market cornered on a lot of these things. For a while, United States had the market cornered. Like 90% of the lead in the world came out of the mines in southern Missouri, and that's batteries, but things are changing now.
Yeah.
No more lead acid batteries, and the balance of power is changing. But you can imagine if zero point energy came about, and if it was a grassroots movement, it's going to change everything fundamentally.
Oh, yeah. Well, remember what Ralph Ring said, right?
Yep.
Their thing, if it was, assuming it's a valid thing that they were doing, then, what were they told? Some guys came in and said, well, your technology here is a threat to the monetary system.
Yeah.
Now we start to understand why it might be a threat. It would. I mean, ultimately, if you have that type of technology, you absolutely don't need any money at all. You don't need anything. So it makes perfect sense. Assuming that that's what he said was what happened to him, then that I wouldn't be surprised that that's exactly what they would do. And they would also keep that. If you're them, you know exactly what to keep your eyes open for.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're looking around scanning the planet for anything, you know what technology to look for, what they're doing, how they're going to present it, and the moment they pop their head up, you go visit them, and take them out of the picture.
Mm-hmm.
It appears to be exactly what they're doing. But the thing is, I don't think we realize just how big of a threat that particular technology is to them.
Yeah.
It absolutely eliminates everything that they want. And so, yeah. It makes sense then when you figure out that that's what they're doing, that, yeah, they're going, I'm actually probably surprised, given that idea, that they don't actually come down on harder on people and a lot faster and let anything get out at all.
Hmm.
You know, so, but I guess the more resistance they had offered towards, they have to have a little bit, because if they do too much, then that also would point to it as well. So they have to be pretty careful how they're doing things. Otherwise, people figure it out. And it's probably actually not that complicated. It's actually probably fairly simple. So once you figure it out, it's probably not too difficult to get other people doing it.
Yeah. Well, if you can, it's something you can just build at home.
Well, there's a lot of people building stuff. I mean,
yeah, Sterling went to South Africa to pick up a
machine.
It's
like when we lost power here, and my brother has a solar panel set up, right? And you know, I'm using it right now.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that technology is probably going to increase too.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, boy, yeah, I was reading. Somebody did, one of the big polling outfits did a survey on what percentage of people believe that, you know, that the world is either going to end or something big is going to happen.
Oh,
and they said that the majority of the people in this country and Turkey believe something big is about ready to happen.
Yeah.
But it's like, you know, everybody in Great Britain is just poo-pooing it, you know. Because they poo-poo everything. But this is one of the major pollsters just came out with this today.
Yeah, I think I saw that. Yeah, I think that the we also have certain indicators. I mean, we have the airports having to move their runways. We have things with the animals occurring that indicate there might be some, and we know that the North magnetic pole is on the move and accelerating. And we know that in geologic history, we know that we're in the ballpark for what they call magnetic reversal. And we know what has happened according to the geologic record when that's occurred in the past.
Mm-hmm. Yep, they can tell.
And it's usually pretty hard on life. It seems to fit with some of the things that's said in the Bible about certain things occurring, things manifesting and happening. So,
when they did DNA research and they discovered that there were, about 50,000 years ago, it was known that a great volcano went off, and they said the population of the Earth, you know, dwindled about 50,000 for a while, and then it came back.
Yeah.
And they could tell that from the way the DNA.
We have a tendency to just look at one thing, and we have to say, well, you know, why were those volcanoes doing that? So I don't think it's just, you know, a volcano or this. I think it's a multitude of things. But at the core of it, it's probably an energy pattern that has to do probably with the magnetic fields and the torsion fields of the planet and the sun itself, and those things operate in cycles.
Mm-hmm.
So, and we can see those cycles literally in the geologic record.
Yeah.
They look at the magnetic lines of the lava flow, right?
That's right, they do. We got about eight minutes left. If you want to take a call, if somebody's out there?
Sure, if anybody wants to call.
Yeah, because we're just kind of, we're at 347.
Forgot about everybody, right?
Well, yeah, I wanted you to tell your story. We're at 347-996-3318, or you can Skype in. Right next to the phone number on the page you're listening to, you can Skype in. And I understand, you know, people do have problems getting through, but, you know, we've got a few minutes left and maybe get a free Mayan birthday reading. And the live audience tonight's not real big, but a lot of people are gonna hear this in replays. Yeah, we generally get four or five times as many people listen to the archive shows. But yeah, we've had a couple thousand listens the month that we've been on.
But yeah, I got to keep watching the studio here. Yeah, no, nobody. Yeah, 347-996-3318. But yeah, we've got. We've had a total of 2,249 listens. Just kind of depends on who's on. Some of the most popular shows were the ones that that we did on the ancient Cherokee history.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it doesn't look like we've got any takers, so yeah, just go ahead.
Everybody went to sleep.
Yeah, there'll be a lot more fun. It's a late hour, but yeah, I had a good interview with Raylan tonight. We spent a couple hours, and I know I'm tired. It's quite a day. Yeah, and I have to do most of the housework too because of Linda's back, and it keeps me busy.
Did you ask her? Because you normally ask her when you run the Torah thing. Did you ask her if she was born before or after sundown?
No, I sure didn't.
Oh, okay. I was curious on that one because she was so close to the Wanik on her.
Oh, is that right? Yeah, and it makes the only time it makes a difference is if like your the Torah portions. I think they're like 20 days. You know, you can be born any time, but if you're right up against that next portion, you need to know whether you're born before or after sundown. Most times, it doesn't make a difference. Maybe 5% of people it would make a difference, but she's a 13. Emiks, you know, same sign as my wife, Crocodile, but she's a galactic tone of 13. I'm going, whoa, you know, she's the first person I ever met that was a 13. These people are supposed to be very strong. And, it's, and I ran all of my wife's family and had a lot of problems, and most of them just never got out of there. You know, their problems, and they're all like twos, threes, down in that. And they just had a tough time overcoming their challenges. And
well, they have to remember when they look at that and they're on those lower numbers pair with the higher numbers.
Mm-hmm.
And the higher numbers pair with the lower numbers. So you look at both sides of it, and that's like the two serpents, the balance.
Yeah.
And that, usually, because that's the mistake some people tend to make, we tend to look at one thing, and when you miss the other thing, which is the counterbalance. And so when you're aware of the counterbalance and look at it, sometimes that shows you something or teaches you something that helps you work through it.
Mm-hmm. Well, her brother, they're born 6 minutes apart. You know, they got the same Mayan birthday, but... he just didn't overcome all the stuff that they went through in their youth, and he fell into a different pattern, and having a tough time in life, and figuring things out. He's been married 4 times, and they all left him, and just not willing to take a look. And when the universe keeps knocking on your door, and you keep having the same things happening over and over again, you have got to take a look. Because if
some
you don't...
Of these people, I just add more locks on the door, right?
Yeah.
And, you Bolt know,
it can't be me. There's nothing wrong with me. You know, what are you saying, you know? And, I've worked on myself, and you look at these people and go, huh? You know,
well, wouldn't be here if they had.
Well, and they could, and there's some people, you know, I knew one gal, I mean, she read every self-help book, and she could help everybody else, but she could not help herself because she refused to be vulnerable.
Yeah.
She was afraid she was going to cry.
Hmm.
You know, and that was that's what was holding her up. She was just so scared that she was going to have to... go through and then forgive her. You know, take a look at what she'd done and then forgive herself. I mean, why is it so hard just to forgive yourself?
Well, because you know all the crap.
You know, well, we're human. We're human. We make.
Well, It's just the way it is, I think.
It's not like she beat her kids. She, you know, she just, you know, made some errors and just didn't want to take a look. So anyway, but yeah, we're here to progress. But
this is Jasa Sagonige, a seventh great grandson of Savanuka, keeper of the Holy Cherokee Ark, who during the American Revolution became first beloved man of the Cherokee, head man of the Upper, Middle, and Lower Cherokee. Please join us at 5 p.m. Pacific Time on Sunday evening and learn how you, regardless of ancestry, may gain the privilege of worshiping as you please, even using indigenous, plant-based, native sacraments. Aho. You are listening to a pre-recorded interview from the archives of Prophecy Keepers Radio. Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. This station's only means of support is through donations and purchases of the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library, which includes lifetime online access to a printable 1,000-page intelligence briefing and a worldwide indigenous prophecy encyclopedia. Now, folks, there's nothing else like this collection on the planet. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keepers Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files and 222 folders. It includes the Prophecy Keepers Preppers Self-Reliance files and all of our previous over 100 Prophecy Keepers interviews. So head on over to prophecykeepers.com right now and have a free sneak peek today of two-thirds of the Prophecy Keepers trilogy and a peek of the dashboard of the Prophecy Keepers Wisdom Treasury Vault.
Inside the heart, deep in the mouth. like a lover's hand upon the heart. The very breath you gave me grows intently through the years.
It becomes a dream.
So let the wind blow.
Let the truth.